Have you ever spoken to somebody from a communist country or someone who has family that lived through communism? You'll understand the signs of it and the rise of it in your country very distinctly and very clearly. People will say, oh, it's so complex. There's so many things going on. And it feels that way right now in the United States. We're taking so much incoming. There's so much happening all at once. But you know what? I see it the other way. I think what's happening is crystal clear. What we are now experiencing within the confines of these United States is the rise of American Bolshevism. You look at what they've done, from arresting the opposition leader to going after dissident media for instituting a gulag in Washington, D.C., full of dissidents from January 6th. Targeting churches and this new trans militant movement, going after people in schools, going after people like Riley Gaines who speak out. It's very clear. And so joining me today to talk about this are two great patriotic, freedom-loving fighters and dissidents themselves, Gavin Wax and Viva Fry. So join us, ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard for this Human Events Sunday special.
I want to take a second to remind you to sign up for the POSO Daily Brief. It is completely free. It'll be one email that's sent to you every day. You can stop the endless scrolling, trying to find out what's going on in your world. We will have this delivered directly to you, totally for free. Go to humanevents.com/POSO. Sign up today. It's called the POSO Daily Brief. Read what I read for show prep. You will not regret it. Humanevents.com/POSO, totally free, the POSO Daily Brief.
There's Donald Trump, former US president himself. A wave, that's all, just a wave, and then moving towards the DA's office entrance now.
All right, we are welcoming back here on Human Events Daily this Sunday special, my friend, Mr. Gavin Wax. You guys know him. He's a columnist. He is an ambassador for Turning Point USA, a populist activist, a rabble rouser, as Mayor Eric Adams recently said up there in the city of New York. Of course, you and I were standing shoulder to shoulder. You held that incredible protest at the arrest of President Donald Trump. And Gavin, the theme of this episode, the thing that I think we really need so many people to understand, is that we're living through right now the rise of Bolshevik forces in America. And whether people want to talk about the politics of the day and, you know, this thing about Trump or that thing about Trump, they arrested him. They just arrested the leader of the opposition in New York City, of all places, right? And because, of course, it had to be New York, because where else would you arrest Donald Trump? And that is a moment that we're going to remember forever. Gavin, do you think people understand the gravity of what's going on right now?
Jack, I think sadly many don't. I think many are just going through the daily motions and just living their lives and don't understand the fight that we're up against, don't understand the state of the nation. I mean, and this is not something that happened overnight. This is the long Marxist march through our institutions that has been happening over a period of generations. And this arrest of the president, the leader of the opposition, the presumptive nominee in 2024 is a culmination of all their efforts. And the left have brilliantly mastered the art of pushing the envelope, of seeing how far they can get away with this sort of political warfare before they're called out and they meet resistance. And the problem is that our country doesn't really have an effective resistance force to the machinations of the left. We have token opposition. We have leaders in the GOP and the conservative movement that are basically bowing out and surrendering to the left, maybe because they don't like Trump. They have personal issues with him, whatever it may be. But they don't understand the gravity of this situation, where it puts our country, and where it's going to lead us over the next few generations. I mean, this is opening a Pandora's box of political consequences that we haven't really seen before in our republic, but are all too common the world over. So sadly, we are returning to the global median, which is not a healthy one in terms of political freedom and diversity of thought.
Well, and we really need to understand this, because I think there's a lot of people out there who, and good people, good meaning people, especially, you know, even people on the right or kind of in the center right, who think that by explaining away the situation, they think, well, if you can understand the roots of this particular flavor of Bolshevism that's arisen, if you can explain the playbook, if you can understand the strategy here, then somehow that gives you power over it. But I don't think that's right, is it? Because actual power only exists in the exercise of power. So just because I'm reading more about particular flavors of Western Bolshevism, which obviously, you know, and we're going to talk about in the next segment, how it's based on these ideas of race and gender, as opposed to necessarily the Eastern communism, which was much more that pure class-based, class hatred. It still comes down to this idea of oppressor versus oppressed. And at the end of the day, does it really matter when the gun is pointed in your direction and you're staring down the base of it? And I think this is also something where, Gavin, you and I do agree where that it the response to it doesn't need to be endless debate over it. The response to it needs to be a retaking of the institutions, particularly law enforcement and particularly state and federal government, so that we can actually do something about it by using these types of powers against those that are trying to criminalize their political opponents.
Absolutely. I think we need to punch back. We need action. We can't simply write a million white papers and, you know, discuss this to death. I mean, we need to actually see efforts made on the ground to retake our institutions, to retake our government, and ultimately to wield that government for our own ends. And if you have a political, you know, fight and one side is willing to use power and the other side isn't, well, the side that's willing to use it is always going to come out on top. And we've seen this be replicated time and time again. And you made a good distinction there between these different forms of Marxism that have existed over the years and geographically different parts of the world. And I think the form of Marxism that we're facing in the United States, this cultural Marxism, developed to take advantage of a situation where we've had general peace, security, and prosperity, and they had to create these victim classes. They had to create these underclasses. They had to create these divisions along all these crazy and more ridiculous lines. Now we're, you know, in the gender stage of it. Who knows what comes next? And they create these divisions. They then empower these divisions through demoralization, and then they slowly take over the institutions until we're fighting on enemy turf effectively. And that's what it feels like to be a conservative in many ways today in the United States. And I think, you know, you could say McCarthy was right, and many others were right, like Walt Disney, when they said that America was facing an insidious creeping campaign and offensive into our country to advance this radical left-wing agenda. And I'm glad we're coming around to it now. Hopefully it's not too little and too late. But what we need to do is we need to rally behind someone who can actually effectively punch back against this.
We all know Trump from, you know, movies and business deals and his TV show, of course. But also there's something about him as the embodiment of New York, right? This the New York of the 80s, New York, where it was the place where your dreams could come alive, the city that never sleeps, the Big Apple, that version of New York, which by and large, he was responsible for actually creating, right? He was Mr. New York in the and by the way, I say that as a Philadelphia guy, right? I'm not even a New Yorker. So I'm just saying, like, I could see it, even though technically, you know, rival cities in the East Coast and all that. But to take a guy like that, and you saw the reaction he gets at UFC, it's because the new version of what we have, it is a longhouse. It's consensus-based government. It's rule by committee, rule by this very feminized version of how things should be run, rather than leaders who have decisive action, which is more of the masculine mode of things.
Yeah, I love everything you're saying. I mean, look, he's the patriarch. He's the American patriarch, and we need that right. Kind of energy, that kind of charisma, that kind of pit bull fighting brawler spirit that he embodies. We can't.
Which,
go back
by the way, is of course why the UFC crowd likes him, because he's a fighter. That's
exactly.
Kind of,
and this is
why you get the reaction.
And this is why the nerds will never understand it, the political nerds. It's that they try to put everything in this kind of, you know, hoity-toity ideological framework. But he transcends ideology, and the people like him, not because of all the nuance of his policy positions necessarily. They may like those as well, but they like him for who he is, for his gait, how he carries himself, how he's willing to get in the arena, like Teddy Roosevelt said, and fight day in and day out against the establishment, against the left. And it's a two-front war, make no mistake about it. And sometimes our biggest fights are within, and he has been the one to wage that. He's been the one to expose that. He's the one who's actually shifted the narrative, shifted the Overton window, and got us thinking in different ways, whether we like to admit it or not.
But it's also why that the arrest of Donald Trump is not about one man. It's about the establishment cracking down on these types of ideas that you're espousing.
Absolutely. And he has been, and President Trump himself has been referencing this in a lot of his messaging, that he is our retribution and they're coming after him because they want to come after you, the people. He is a proxy. And I think people need to put aside their petty political differences with the president and realize that they come for him first, but they're going to come for many others after. And if they can arrest him on trumped up charges, no pun intended, they can come after any and all political dissidents, any and all who challenge the orthodoxy, any and all who challenge the party line.
We're coming up on a break, but next segment, I want to talk about one of the other militant wings that we've seen the rise of recently, not just BLM, not just Antifa, but the trans militants, militant trans rights, the transurrectionists, if you will. Stay tuned. Come back with Gavin Wax. All right, now, Gavin, what I wanted to talk about and where I was leading with all of this is that something that you see in every Marxist movement, really, is that you need to find a group of people to become your street toughs, your street thugs. You need your militant base. You need your militant arm. And so when that was Bolshevik China, that became the peasants, that Mao would go into the peasant, fields out in the West. And he would say, "All right, you farmers, you're being oppressed by your landlords. That's why you need to rise up and kill them." They, of course, this happened in the Soviet Union. And when they went to Russia and said, "It's all the Tsar. The Tsar has done this all to you. Now you've got to break your chains of serfdom and come forward." You saw it back in the 60s, right? They did this with the race riots that happened all across the country, every single major city, with where they would fan the flames of these race riots, starting in Harlem, not far from where you are in New York right now, but also Detroit, Philadelphia, Chicago, L.A. The Watts riots came up in the 60s, and then it just went all the way across the country. And then, of course, now we lionize the 1960s. And this also included, by the way, other just communist groups like the Weather Underground and the Black Panthers, these terrorist groups, bombings that were going off like crazy. And so you have this hodgepodge of different types of groups that they're able to use as their militant arm. They're gaining more of their militant wings. We saw it in 2020 as well, when I call that a cultural revolution with Antifa and BLM. But I think there's a new arm to the militant wing of American Bolshevism, and it's these transurrectionists, these militant trans, we don't even have the right words for them yet, actually, these trans militants, basically, where one of them, of course, as we know, just shot up a Christian school down in Nashville, Tennessee. We're told the FBI is is going to release the manifesto just as soon as they're done looking at it. But yeah, I think I'm pretty sure we'll get that as soon as we get, you know, Epstein's client list. But Gavin, why is it that they've been able to use this trans movement as such a militant arm, not only from the physical violence that you see that goes on at these riots, these trans erections, but also a form of almost intellectual dominance where everyone is forced to have to acquiesce to this, or you will be faced with the consequences?
No, you're bringing up a lot of great points and asking a great question here, Jack. I mean, the left have mastered the art, the science, really, of radicalizing different segments of society. And they understand that you only need a small percentage of an overall society to destabilize it. And they've done this throughout the years. You cited the history going back, you know, to the serfs and the Russian Revolution. But today, they're doing it in a whole litany of different ways. I mean, first, they strip people of all their legitimate and beneficial identities, whether it's a belief in God, you know, a family support network, or even their nationality. And then they replace it with, you know, a bunch of, you know, convoluted identities that are largely propped up through drug use. In the case of, say, these transurrectionists, I don't know the terminology exactly, but if you could strip them if you could take people that are, you know, starting from a point of maybe just being slightly misguided, slightly lost, maybe a little depressive, and you can take advantage of those underlying issues and then and replace it with this kind of this radicalization, this violent rhetoric, this violent radicalism, you can turn them into the useful idiots and the foot soldiers of this left-wing, you know, this left-wing movement. They could be the vanguard, if you will. And again, it only takes a small percentage of the population to be radicalized in such a way to really destabilize society. And what do we see them doing? We see them pushing these drugs. We see them pushing this ideology. We see them pushing this perversion because they are trying to effectively brainwash people and turn them into these foot soldiers. And they start when they're young, and that's the easiest and most malleable time to do it. And they're just following a very power hungry, cold and direct playbook for power. And that's what we need to understand that this is at the end of the day.
We did see some of this at the New York protest that I attended, but you've obviously seen a lot more of these as you've been holding at various events in New York City. Is that right?
Yeah. And I think there's a large segment of the population that are post-political. They're post-persuasion. There's no sort of moderate or, you know, pragmatic or sensible talking points that you're going to get to win these people over. These people, you could present them with the facts that show 2 + 2 = 4, and they will deny it because they've been taught that it equals 5. There's no persuasion. It's tribal. It's post-political. And you're dealing with an individual or a person that simply is lost. And we need to focus on the shrinking amount of people that are still persuadable to build governing coalitions and then to effectuate change. But to try to reach out to some of these guys on the other side, they're just too far gone, and they're not going to see the light unless it comes from within. And I think that's why it's also important to embrace things that go beyond politics. You know, you have to touch on religion, spirituality, culture, etc., because some of these people can't be won over from an electoral perspective, an electoral persuasion that a lot of people, you know, in the electabro community online likes to use is just not going to win these guys over. It's going to take more than that. We could still hope that they could, you know, maybe see the light and shift a bit. But what you see in places like New York, what you see in places like these deep blue cities in the major metropolitan areas is a post-political environment where there's one party rule from top down, and they basically run free. And that's the exact form of one party New York style governance that the left wants to import to the country as a whole. They want the Democrat Party, the Democrat machine, to run all levels of government across the country with no competition, with no opposing voices, and they want to destroy the two-party system. And, you know, the two-party system is flawed, mostly because we have one party that doesn't really do much to counter the other party, but it's the best thing we have right now. Tucker Carlson has said it, you know, the GOP is the best vehicle we have in many ways, for whatever that's worth. So we have to use these political tools at our disposal, along with a litany of other things from religion and culture, et cetera.
You know, I got into it with Luke Radowski on a Tim Pool episode once. And I talked about John Stewart, and I talked about the role that John Stewart played in the country to take us away from this view of the country where we could have two parties that essentially meant well for each other, for the country, for the people, that we're each fighting for the people. We had different, you know, maybe represented different interests, but we're all part of the same country. But there was something that he did with the particular way that he gamified politics and that he weaponized comedy, because he was never really a political guy. He still isn't, to be honest. I'm the only conservative that he's ever had to apologize to. What he did when he ran The Daily Show all throughout the 2000s was he turned it into a show that was basically like political talk radio, and not just talk radio about politics, but actually sports radio. So this idea that in every town you go to, so like take you and I, for example, like in where I grew up, every radio station supported the Phillies, right? It was like Phillies radio, because this is Phillies country. Then you go up to New York. Now you're going to find some hosts that support the Yankees. And for me, it's like, how dare you support the Yankees, right? Or the Mets, et cetera, et cetera. You see where I'm going with this? So then what he did was he applied that to politics. And so he said, it wasn't that we're going to report or make fun the way Norm Macdonald used to, would just make fun of people regardless of what your political division was. He was going to take a side and then just rip on everybody on the other side and treat them as if there was something wrong with them. And I've seen that type of view absolutely dominate ever since. Even to the point where he went on Crossfire with, and you just mentioned Tucker, with Tucker himself, and told them to stop having this TV show where it's both sides actually sit down and talk. He played a massive role in that.
That was a massive, I remember that interview well, and I think it was an inflection point in many ways in the American body politic. And look, I think I'm not a fan of Stewart. I used to watch him when I was younger, but he's certainly brilliant, even if you disagree with him. Yeah, we all did. And he was funny. He was effective. And I think he represents the left's hold on artistic talent, because he was able to use art and comedy as an art, as a weapon, as a tool to advance a left-wing agenda. And I agree with you fully in terms of how he was able to actually start the beginning of a sort of a dehumanization campaign, because it starts with mockery. It starts with them mocking and belittling and basically making fun of the opposition. And then it ends up being, you know, that you're not even a human anymore if you're a Republican or conservative. And I think case in point, there's this meme that's been going around, this trend where people are posting their childhood photos and saying, you know, when you call me an alt-right fascist, this is who you're talking about. And it actually draws out the worst elements of the left, because they come out and they're yelling at this 5-year-old picture of somebody, you know, saying how they want to do horrible things to this person and all this violence. And it just goes to show that they have turned a segment of society into these rabid hyenas that will attack anyone on command if you say the right words, if you call them a conservative, if you call them a Republican, if you label them whatever, immediately that person in their eyes is now dehumanized, and it justifies any sort of vitriol towards them.
It's because you're activating their programming, right? You're activating their preconditioning. But I was going to say that those are the same people that to a T, they will have a sign out front of their house or on their car that says, hate has no home here. Or they'll say, be kind. They'll say, practice kindness, spread kindness, spread cheer, spread happy. Whenever you find someone who says hate has no home here, I'm against hate, they're actually the most hateful people in the entire country. It's just that their bigotry is targeted towards what they view as an anti everything kind of movement. And that's what they would refer to the rest of us. By the way, I find it so funny that I just heard that the DNC is holding their convention in 2024 in Chicago, which of course you would only pick Chicago as a place of your shining example if you had been so absolutely North Korea style propagandized that you would believe that that city has anything successful about it. Gavin Wax, final words.
Well, I would say they want the rest of the country to resemble Chicago. So in many ways, they're showing their true colors there. And yes, I think you pointed out a cognitive dissonance with many of these people on the left, that they talk about peace, love, and all the rest, but they could be activated at the snap of fingers to be the rabid dogs of this left-wing movement in this country. And I do long for the days where the two parties basically were largely on the same page. There was a national consensus. They had different constituencies, maybe different geographic regions, but you know, they debated over tariffs, you know, 25 or 30. I mean, I would love to go back to days like that where parties were largely the same and just, you know, different on the edges. But now we're in a different era of the American political system, and we have to realize that if we're going to effectively fight back and defend this republic.
Now, do people have a sense of self-survival or not? Gavin Wax, where can people follow you? What are your coordinates?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me on. You can follow me at Gavin Wax, G-A-V-I-N-W-A-X, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all the rest. You can follow my writing at GavinWax.com. And I really appreciate, again, for having me on.
Go and follow Gavin. That guy definitely understands what time it is. Riley Gaines is just the beginning. Producer Angelo says the Red Guard is now the Rainbow Army. The Rainbow Army. I don't know. We'll see if we use that one. Coming up next, Mr. Viva Fry. Stay tuned. Human Events Sunday Special.
Found guilty for posting memes. I don't know the exact details of his court.
He got found guilty?
Yeah, they found him guilty.
And then what? What does that mean?
Do you know the memes guy? It was a very subtle parody of Hillary Clinton. He was like trying to say with this thing, like to Hillary voters, they could just stay home and text your vote into this number. Wasn't that it?
Oh.
Something like that. Yeah,
but it's a parody. Yeah, but they took it seriously. Or somebody said, can you believe this is happening?
They found the dude who did it and they arrested him.
What?
He tweeted that out.
All right, we are very excited to welcome onto the program the host of Viva Fry on Rumble, Mr. Viva Fry himself, also the co-host of Viva and Barnes, one of my favorite shows. You guys should check that out on Locals. We did a great episode, by the way, a while back. It was like one of the few times I actually got to do like the Jack Posobiec bio episode. I thought that was kind of fun. So welcome.
Thank you very much. First of all, we should do it again. Now that we've gotten the entire history out of the way, we can talk about current events in greater detail. But thank you for having me on.
Precisely. Yeah. No, that was a fun episode. It's nice to take a step back. But we've been talking, and so this rise of American Bolshevism, because it feels like we're taking so much incoming every single day, and people are asking, it's so fast that it's even hard for people at home, even when we're putting together the show every day on a daily basis, not just the weekly or the weekend shows like this, that I always take a step back and I say, we're living through an era of regime politics. Western governments are shifting into a mode where they are this sort of overlapping regime, and the World Economic Forum, okay, they're not necessarily the ones that are actually like calling the shots. Klaus Schwab isn't like calling up these world leaders, telling them what to do. But there's certainly an element that I think people can perceive that these governments are sort of merging together at the seams, that you can't really find much difference between, say, the policies of a Trudeau or a Biden or a Macron, Rishi Sunak in the UK. And that's the reason that I wanted to have you on. They said, well, you're doing a show about the rise of American Bolshevism. Why would you have a Canadian on? I say, well, because Canada is like 15 years ahead of where the US is. And what happens there comes down into the US almost like it's like the beta testing of these things before it comes down, because you guys are already ahead of us in terms of this Bolshevism. And you had a great point that I want to tease out, that COVID played a massive role in the acceleration of what you're seeing. Please walk me through that thesis.
Well, so it's an interesting theory. Like, everything makes sense in hindsight. And I remember when I first started my channel, everybody in the chat who were Americans were saying, Canada has no freedom of speech, Viva. You're living in a fantasy land. And I'm like, no, it's pretty good. Like, you know, I don't understand what you're saying. In retrospect, it makes a lot more sense. COVID was the catalyst. They say like bamboo grows 18 feet overnight, but that's not exactly true, because it takes years for the bamboo seed to set the root network so that it can withstand such growth overnight. Looking back now in Canada, we had Jordan Peterson sounding the alarm with Bill C-16, which was criminalizing or adding to the criminal code gender identity as aggravating factors for certain crimes. Back in the day, Jordan Peterson's like, this is going to lead to compelled speech. This is going to be an assault on, it's going to be making us, you know, refer to people in a certain way. And I was like, okay, you might be exaggerating, or you might be seeing problems that don't yet exist. Now you look back at all of these very subtle steps that Canada was taking at the time, laws that did effectively or criminalize free speech, plant the seeds, and then COVID comes around and utterly shatters everything we ever knew about civil, free, democratic society for the greater good. It was always for the greater good, which is, you know, going to dovetail back into the Bolshevism idea. For the greater good, we were upended, we were isolated, we were shut down, we were stripped of all of our most basic fundamental freedoms for the greater good. And, you know, the 2 weeks to flatten the curve turned into 3 years, and now they're finally lifting the measures, at least in the States. It was the shock to the system, something so wildly out of any realm of foreseeability, that anything by comparison seems like, well, it's not that big of a deal. At least they're not locking us down. At least they're not shutting down churches. At least they're not shutting down schools, shutting down businesses, telling us who we can celebrate Christmas with. And so like all of this other stuff that they're pushing, inch after inch, in comparison to what they've already done to us over the last 2 years, seems like less in retrospect. And now people are now, you know, have been conditioned to think sacrifice everything that you ever thought represented a free and democratic society for the greater good. And if you don't do what they're asking you now, which is not so big of a deal, well, look what they did during COVID, you're a selfish bastard. And that's what's being done with every single current thing that is causing people to change their avatars, put up the emojis, et cetera, et cetera.
That's so brilliant. And, you know, we've got a guy here in the United States who is looking at 10 years in prison. His sentencing date hasn't come up yet, over posting a meme. And it's not just cases like Doug Mackey getting convicted and prosecuted for posting memes. This goes all the way up to, and I'm just going to say it, the reason that they are pushing this Dominion lawsuit on Fox is to shut down opposition media. They're going to start there and they're going to do it to everyone using whatever legal lawfare means they can find. And then we have this entire industry, this quasi-government, private, nonprofit industry that Mehdi Hasan is, you know, very interested in protecting. And people like Sweaty Ben Collins are, I call him Sweaty Ben. I saw him at the New York protest and I said, Ben, why are you so sweaty? You're always sweaty on TV. And he was super sweaty, by the way, there in New York. I said, Sweaty Ben, I can get you a great deal on towels, promo code POSO. And he just saw me and kind of took off. And it's brilliant of you to put this in that frame. It's that these people, they were essentially given a blank check during COVID, and it was a massive power play between who has the actual power in society. They realized that they were able to get away with literal murder in some cases. Like when you look at Pennsylvania and New York under Cuomo, Michigan, some other areas.
Mass murder, Jack.
Mass murder. That's right. That's right. Mass murder. And someone said that to me recently. They said, well, how come you called for Cuomo to be prosecuted and you're saying that Trump shouldn't be prosecuted? And I said, well, he killed people. He killed thousands of people and instructed his officials to lie about it. So, yeah, I usually think that's something that we put people in jail for, not someone who's making a payment and the account wasn't to stop, please. But you're right that it is this setup now where they've realized that what they could get away with. So the relative shock value of the loss of freedom of speech isn't as high because we've already gone through that shock. And then kids, like my kids, your kids that are growing up, they won't even know what it used to be like because they've never experienced it.
That was actually, get bogged down on the black pills. That was one of my deepest black pills of this entire event. I remember going to a Phish concert at Sugarbush. I took a bus down, I think it's in Vermont. I took a bus cross-border to go see Phish at Sugarbush, an open-air concert. It was something of, not a spiritual event, but it was. I remember everything. And I was like, my kids are never going to understand that. They're never going to know that. And they're never going to know what has been stolen from them. They're going to think that we should be living in a world where the government can literally say who you can and cannot have in your home, where they literally say how you can and cannot celebrate Christmas. And but it was a pandemic. And like, I've been listening to a lot of books. I say listening because I don't read anymore, but I've been listening to a lot of books, one of which was Michael Malice White Pill, talking about communism throughout history, where they literally told you who you could and could not have in your home and criminalized what they said was dangerous conduct at the time. I'm from Montreal, Quebec, Canada. CBC put out an article during the heat of the pandemic. CBC, state-funded propaganda. The article was entitled, "The Joys and Perils of Snitching on Your Neighbor During a Pandemic." We created a culture in Canada where people were literally calling the police because they looked out their window and saw people who were not social distancing outside, where people were not wearing face masks to go into grocery stores and they were getting ticketed. Our kids are not going to know what was stolen from them, which makes the theft even more shocking. You know, someone steals your car, you know that your car was stolen, you go get a new car, you get an insurance claim. Someone steals the engine out of your car and you never really realize that, you've had something stolen from you that you'll never know was taken until it's too late, if ever. Our children have had it stolen for the greater good, and they've been sensitized and conditioned to accept as a free society what 4 years ago would have been a tyrannical, despotic, nightmare of a dystopian futuristic novel.
Well, and to the people that lived prior to this, if you went back and told them what the world would be like, not to mention the rise of the trans militants as the latest militant wing of the regime, that they would have no idea. They would think you were talking about some kind of science fiction dystopian, I guess, in a book at the time, or, you know, some Jules Verne or something, that there's no way that could ever exist in a free nation. And yet here we are.
Can you imagine? We live in an era where people have a twisted logic, twisted morality to say protecting trans kids means allowing them to mutilate their bodies at a young age before they can even consent to a tattoo. That's what protection means. Protecting trans kids means adults deferring to the undeveloped, ill-informed judgment of children. It's madness, but it's such madness. And I sit here every morning saying, it's beyond the pale of what I could possibly have imagined. 5 years ago, Jack, 5 years ago, Jeffrey Rush was getting canceled for allegedly exposing his genitalia to people on set. Now, Riley Gaines is getting physically assaulted because she says, I don't want males exposing their genitalia to me in a locker room. I don't want to be forced for that. A woman gets physically assaulted at San Francisco State University, forcibly confined, what I'd say false imprisonment, in a classroom for 3 hours while cops do whatever they were doing and people outside talk about, you know, releasing her if she pays them. Whether or not they were joking, it's irrelevant. We're living in a world now where a woman gets assaulted by a man for saying, I don't want to be exposed to the male genitalia.
That's false arrest, kidnapping. That is a federal crime, not for
murder. I broke down the difference between kidnapping and false arrest. This would be false arrest because they pinned her down on location. They didn't take her with. But we're living in a world now where Riley Gaines gets assaulted by a man for defending women's rights because she doesn't want to be exposed to male genitalia in the locker room or compete against biological males. And people are now effectively cheering and lauding the university and the students for doing what they did, where 5 years ago it was the liberal, progressive, Democrat, hashtag Me Too movement. There can be no consistency in principles where there is no anchorage in some objective morality, but it's almost just unfathomable to see the new normal, which would have been a year ago absolutely abnormal, and it's happening at an exponentially fast rate where by design or by accident the outcome is the same. It's happening, and people are either hijacking, co-opting, or orchestrating it to happen this quickly.
We are coming up on a break, but when we come back, I want to get your thoughts on the next level of this, because we've seen it going on in the United States, the religious persecution, the rise of the targeting of the Christian communities, the churches. But then also, I want to get your thoughts on where we can go. Come right back. Human Events Sunday Special, Mr. Biafra.
What is radical Catholic ideology? Why were we looking into that? What's that about?
I'm not able to speak to specifics of the actual product. I think that's what the internal review that I referenced earlier is getting.
Doesn't that concern you?
And we're back here. So, Viva, this week, you know, we got an incredible report from the FBI that had been released. This actually came from the Weaponization of the Government Committee headed by Jim Jordan, that it turned out that not only was the FBI writing articles and threat reports on Catholic churches that they viewed were just being a little bit too Catholic for their liking. They were praying the rosary too many times. I've got two in so far this morning, by the way, one in English and one in Latin. And it also came out that the FBI was sending undercover informants and at least one employee of the FBI into these churches to do God knows what. And we've seen this in the wake of the same way that COVID became the catalyst for so many of these overall taking away of our rights when it comes to freedom of speech, when it comes to assembly, et cetera. But also with January 6th, in their telling, January 6th was an evil insurrection, the storming of the Capitol. We almost lost an attack on democracy. We almost lost our democracy. Of course, you know, constitutional republic, but who cares? That they're now able to use many of the laws that were put in place after 9/11 that were used to target certain groups in the U.S., but using the justification of saying we're preventing another January 6th, the same way we used to say we're preventing another 9/11. Now that's being turned against patriot groups, gun groups, parents groups, if you stand up for something in your school board, now Catholic churches. And of course, they're targeting churches. They're targeting any I think what it is they're targeting ideological opponents, and they're targeting any other overarching ideology that has purchase and power in the United States or even in the West to try to delegitimize it, to try to attack it, to try to make people stop believing. Don't believe that church. Don't believe that Bible. Don't believe that leader from 2,000 years ago. Don't even worry about that stuff anymore. We're going to take that power away. But not just because they think there's something wrong with it, because they're trying to replace it.
1,000%. Jack, and when I went to Washington, D.C., and I know it's a beautiful place, but when I went there, it was my first time, and I said, this looks like people erecting monuments to themselves as though they're gods. And whether or not you like the government, because it's your party that's in power, government does view itself as the new modern replacement of God. And COVID illustrated it, I mean, at least for me in Canada, like nothing else. They wanted to tell you where you could learn, who you could associate with, and they wanted to set the grounds of morality for you. Government views itself as the new God, and in order to establish that power, it has to destroy the old God, or what competes with it in terms of influence, guidance, and what might be a motivation for people to say what the government is doing is immoral, and therefore it should not be lawful. There's no question that that's the purpose, that's their objective. I always say, people need some form of religion. And with the secularization of society, people sort of, what they were not getting that was of value from religion, they need to get it from somewhere else. And the government has seen that they can be that, source of power, influence, and control over the people. And it's part and parcel. A lot of these policies that the governments are jamming down people's throats, which are fundamentally sacrilegious, and I'll say that, fundamentally sacrilegious, when you have governments talking about late-term abortions and no restrictions whatsoever, what would otherwise be described as genital mutilation of children, when people object and when those who object tend to be the ones with consistent anchored morals, those tend to be religious people, and they also tend to be the only religion that people feel comfortable criticizing. That would be Christianity, Catholicism. Try to criticize Judaism for objecting to certain principles. People won't have it. Try to criticize Islam, they won't have it. So the easy target are the Christians, and the government knows it.
You know, it's funny. We posted a picture of Latin Mass when we went on Easter, and in the Latin Masses, the women wear veils. And my wife actually grew up Orthodox, so for her, wearing a veil is just kind of normal. It's a sign of respect. It's a sign of filial piety, and it's just sort of what you do. And we got so many comments of people saying, how could you wear that? Why would you wear that? And it occurred to me at one point that I said, imagine saying that to Ilhan Omar. Imagine saying that to any Muslim, just randomly, that you would go and post on. You wouldn't even think of it, right? There's only one religion that we've normalized criticizing, and that is Christianity. And I think that it is because it has the status quo. It is the dominant religion, whether or not maybe not necessarily in terms of the attendance rates, obviously they haven't been as dominant as it was in the past, but in the ideas of its control, as you say, over society, it's given those moral guardrails that government, and its ever thirsty, unquenchable thirst for power, is always trying to take over. Viva, we've got a couple of minutes left. I'd love to get your thoughts. Where do we go from here? How can we do anything about this? Is it possible to fight back? Should we give up? Should we just roll over? Should we just roll over and take it and say, whatever, our kids will just be resigned to this. And, let's just go watch the latest Netflix series.
It is impossible to roll over and just take it, or roll over and abandon yourself to it, because there is no it to which you would be ultimately abandoning yourself and your future. There's no limit to what these powers are pushing for. And if the illustration needs to get any more concrete than where we've gone in 5 years in terms of women's rights, there's no limit. And so there is nothing to sit down and just give up to, because it'll just keep going over and over again, going on forever and ever. It's tough not to get blackpilled. And it's tough not to say, at some point, I'll just drink the Kool-Aid. The entire town has gone crazy, so I'll just do it as well. That will not do anything other than sacrifice your future. Fighting back, there's no question, but it always has to stay peaceful, and it can't be fighting back in a way that's going to be weaponized and used against you, counter to your interests. And then people say, well, you can't fight back by their rules, because then you're fighting with your hands tied behind your back. The other thing that you certainly can't do is I don't want to get into any controversial historical examples. You can't fight back in a way that would even repel the people that you're trying to convince. And so I had Jimmy Dore on the channel a month ago, and he said, you know, like, people think it's about waking the sheep. It might just be about gathering the lions. And so that way you can get to those people that need to be convinced, but it has to be done slowly. It has to be done in a way that is going to allow them to wake up from the matrix, so to speak. You can't just pull out the plug. You got to wake them up. And then even then, once they wake up, they might have some withdrawal or some pushback. It will take endless conversation. It will take endless mockery on social media, on media as a whole. It will take people not being too shy to speak their mind and to speak what is right and what they believe to be right. That's it. It just takes people who are not afraid to be the nail to stick up, because the nail that sticks up gets the hammer. But the other expression is, courage is contagious. And so the more nails that start popping up, well, then the carpenter might just give up there. It's a bad analogy, but you see what I'm getting at.
I see exactly what you're getting at. No,
you can't just roll over because
eventually, at some point, you will get that critical mass. You'll get a critical mass of people that say, you know what, I don't like getting hit by that hammer anymore.
People at some point, good sense has to take over. The trans craze is the most clear cut illustration of collective madness. As fast as it comes, it does turn, and people look back at even the age of lobotomy. I know people use this analogy, and it's not a terrible analogy. People look back at the craze of lobotomy, and then how could they have ever done that? Shouldn't they have known that they were doing damage to people? The crazes come, and then they go. But you can't just abandon it, because they want everything. They want utter control.
It's so interesting you mentioned that, because I don't even think I've said this publicly yet, but an interesting fact that I came across when I was thinking about lobotomy, when I was researching this issue of trans, experimentation on children, it really is experimentation, that lobotomization used to be accepted. It was considered radical. It was considered progressive. It really targeted very strongly in the US and UK young children, or they would say problematic, troubled youth, I think used to be the phrase back then. The pioneer, a Portuguese doctor, Antonio Moniz, was given the Nobel Prize for the creation and the normalization of lobotomization back years ago, not that long ago. And this practice was given. So he was given the Nobel Prize in 1949. That practice was accepted and continued all the way up through the 1960s.
And you say, how could that madness have? It got there, and then it just took consistent pushback and awakening, rationalizing, and just speaking to people who are open to listen, and making, making the examples in a mockery sense of those who are trying to radicalize people to a point that, 2 years ago it would have been immoral. What has changed in the last 2 years? The craze, the media propagating the craze, the government seizing on it because the divided people are easier to rule over, and the government never has to live with the consequences of their own actions. They just derive more power from their own mistakes. So that's it. I mean, you can't get blackpilled because we're here, and you only have two options, real options: giving up or pushing on. And at the end of the day, like the Buddha says, three things cannot long be hidden: the sun, the moon, and the truth. And the truth, and not my truth, not a relative truth, the objective truth of what humans have known for thousands of years will come back into the forefront, into the limelight. We just have to keep on keeping on.
On that note, what a fantastic closer. Viva, where can people follow you? Where can they get your coordinates?
Viva Fry on Rumble. The Viva Fry on Twitter. That's a little bit of a saucier Viva Fry. And vivabarneslaw.locals.com. So Viva Barnes, B-A-R-N-E-S, vivabarneslaw.locals.com for some amazing legal insight, an amazing community. And that's it. If you Google my name, you'll find all social media and some fun articles in the news.
Viva Fry, always a pleasure and an honor, my friend. Thank you for joining us here at Human Events.